This is Financial Standard, the definitive source of news, thought leadership and analysis for Australian wealth management professionals. Financial Standard, take the lead.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Financial Standard podcast. My name's Eliza Bavin, and I'm a senior journalist here with Financial Standard. The Australian private credit market saw massive growth last year, and it's expected to continue growing in 2025, especially as investors continue to be offered attractive yields amidst a backdrop of growing economic uncertainty. In fact, according to the Reserve Bank of Australia, the size of the local private credit market is around $40 billion, or about 2.5% of all business lending. To speak to what we might expect in the sector as 2025 unfolds, I'm joined today by Tanara Credit Partners Managing Director, Peter Zeckley. Peter, welcome to the show.
Hi, good morning, Eliza.
So I'd like to start by asking you to give me a bit of background into the growth that we saw in private credit last year. What was driving it?
Yeah, I mean, just stepping back quickly and looking at the size of the market, just to give listeners a little bit of a perspective. So globally, at the beginning of last year, the market was around $1.5 trillion. So it's a massive market now globally, and that's expected to double over the next 5 years. In Australia, we have a slightly larger estimate of the market size. You know, we think it's currently around $200 billion on the corporate lending side. And again, you can sort of mix and match a little bit, but that again has doubled over the last 5 years. And it's somewhere between 10 to 15% of the corporate lending market now. So it's really a significant market. It's grown very rapidly. And, you know, it's had a number of tailwinds. I think the really impetus to sort of see the growth in the market was coming out of the GFC, where the global regulators really didn't want to see any pressure on the banking sector again, like we saw during the GFC. So they starting with the implementation of Basel III and Basel IV, increased the required capital that banks had to put against loans and the cost of that capital. And what that triggered was a stepping back from sort of more of the non-investment grade, some of the property lending segments of the market by banks, and the entrance of the institutional market. So again, it's really the door was opened, institutional market started. And following that, we've had some really unique conditions that have really, you know, sort of set up the market for growth.
Well, yes, as you kind of mentioned there, the private credit market seems to thrive during periods of uncertainty. And so as investors are preparing for kind of even more of that, especially given the Trump 2.0 presidency and what that might mean for inflation and geopolitical tensions, how might those global issues affect the Australian private credit market? Are we expecting there to be a bit of a flow-on effect?
Yeah, and just starting off, what, you know, what's attractive about the product itself? Again, largely it's a floating rate product. So, you know, as we've seen volatility in rates, you know, obviously here in Australia, we've seen the cash rate go from close to zero up north of 4%. The product itself steps up in terms of its returns to investors. It's a fairly low volatility product in terms of we don't have, you know, it's not sort of going up and down with sort of public views. It's more based on the actual net asset value of the underlying loans. So, you know, what the product does give investors is a low volatility, sort of inflation and rate hedge type product. Plus, it's a high cash income product. So, for example, you know, our current fund, we distribute all the cash flow on a quarterly basis. So you have a product that is really almost a hedge against volatility and uncertainty in the markets. And that's part of the reason that coming out of COVID, when rates were going up, we've seen such a lot of inflows into that product segment. And as you talked about, I think it's even more timely this week with the inauguration of President Trump. And, you know, what we've seen leading up to this week is we saw U.S. Treasury yields actually really picking up materially. And this is to be remembered in a period where inflation's moderating, where the U.S. Fed has been cutting rates. But it really reflects that there's a lot of uncertainty in the market. There's a real concern that inflation is going to return. There's a number of segments, including trade, immigration, budget deficits in the US that could really swing back towards that inflation cycle. So we're really in a market now where globally, you know, with Trump's return, there's a lot of uncertainty. There's a lot of feeling that there's inflationary pressures coming back into the market. And, you know, we can sort of drill down on each one of those, but I think it's something that we need to be looking out for, you know, through the rest of this year.
Well, yes, I mean, as you kind of mentioned, in these periods of uncertainty, private credit can kind of act as a hedge. So you can still get positive returns even when things are looking a little crazy. But what are some of the headwinds that investors could face in 2025? What are you watching out for? What might impact returns?
Yeah, probably. I mean, economically, the biggest impact could come out of tariffs. So on the trade side, so Trump has come in saying, you know, it's gone from everything from being a 10% global tariff, 60% on China, 25% on each of Canada and Mexico. And, you know, while I think most of the market believes this is sort of a prelude to negotiations, we do think tariffs will increase, and that obviously that affects the consumer because it's just sort of an add-on to the supplier cost, you know, of that product. So we think that will definitely flow through. There, a derivative of that for us sitting here in Australia is any slowdown in China. Obviously, it's a significant trading partner, to say the least. So any slowdown in China does affect the Australian economy. So, you know, I think having questions on trade definitely points towards more of an inflationary market. There's been a lot of noise or articles around immigration, obviously a fairly emotional item in the US, talk about changes to the H-1B visa program, which is effectively a way to bring temporary workers in. But staple to that has been now overnight a lot of talk about removing the birthright citizenship regulations in the US, where, you know, people would come in on a visa, their children are born in the US and automatically get citizenship. So what that means is it puts a damper on immigration. Again, with a slower immigration, you do have increased wage pressures, which are naturally inflationary. And finally, the other big one we're looking out for is, you know, Trump during his first term put through significant tax cuts, and that fled through to larger budget deficits. Budget deficits need to be funded. And obviously, again, that does increase the level of rates in the market. And again, it's inflationary. So there's a lot of question marks, a lot of uncertainty. And again, with questions in terms of, you know, how are trade flows going to be affected? How is immigration going to be affected? How are global economies going to be affected? The natural place for institutional money to flow into is private credit. Again, just giving sort of a hedge against that potential rate inflationary pressure, and sort of a safer place in the capital structure versus equity, you know, where any, you know, again, we can look at the product itself. It sits senior to equity. So any deterioration in a company's value, that's worn by equity first, and debt being more senior in the capital structure is buffered from that volatility. So again, where we're concerned about, you know, rates going up, that naturally puts pressure on equities, on property, on a lot of different asset classes.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned institutional investors there, because I did want to touch on Australian super funds. They have been allocating billions of dollars into private credit. And I'm wondering if this is a trend that you think will continue. And if it is, what is the driving force behind institutional investors jumping into the asset class? Is it like what you just mentioned, just trying to make sure that they're hedging their bets and they're making sure that they've got a diversified portfolio? Or is there more to it than that?
Yeah, so if we look at the large Australian super funds, generally, if we start with public equities, typically they're invested probably 55 up to 75% in public equities. Again, and if we step back to my earlier point in terms of where private credit sits within the capital structure. So as an example, if we have a company that's worth $100 million and a loan of $50 million, that means the equity value itself is around $50 million. For our $50 million loan to deteriorate in value, that whole $50 million of equity has to disappear. So that's our buffer against any changes in valuations. And if we look at the broader market, the equity premium, meaning the return you get for equity investments versus where debt is today, is near its all-time low. So that means if you're looking at like for like in terms of returns, you're better off putting it into lower volatility, high cash income product, which can achieve a similar return that you'd get in a riskier, more volatile equity product. So it has been a natural place to allocate. Looking at the large Australian super funds, you know, it ranges obviously between the different different supers, but it's their allocation to private credit is typically somewhere between sort of 5 to 7.5% of the portfolio. So yes, we've seen large inflows from the super funds into private credit, you know, but we still think that it's not overdone. There is still room to grow the allocations. And finally, the last point is, you know, there's private credit does cover a lot of different products. So for TCP, Tanara Credit Partners, we're invested in corporate loans. We don't do property, for example. We don't do structured debt or CLOs. There is a whole range of products which are developing, especially, you know, the Australian market is growing now very quickly, where super funds can say, well, I want to have a nuanced allocation. So maybe, you know, I just want to play in that sort of senior secured part of the market where we're involved, or maybe I want to go into more of a mezzanine type structure or more of a structured debt. So yes, we've seen a lot of allocations, but we think it's going to only increase.
And do you think that this is an area that we'll start to see more wholesale investors also follow suit?
Yeah, it's been, again, we've seen significant growth in the market. Again, there's been in the press the last week or so, some listed trusts getting executed. As a business ourselves, we do have a PDS set up for wholesale investors to invest both their super money and their investment portfolios, you know, through their financial advisors. And, you know, we've seen significant inflows in that segment. And really, you know, you look at, you know, as the market, you know, grows in sophistication, financial advisors obviously want to steer their investors into, you know, what they see as the most attractive asset class at any time. And for all the points we've talked about in terms of, you know, we haven't talked about geopolitical instability, but with Trump coming in, inflation sort of being sticky and not going away, slow down the economy, we're still, you know, we're ticking along at 2%, but it's not, there's probably more risk to the downside today. It's a natural asset class for even wholesale investors to want to put some of their investments.
Also, I mean, as more money from institutional investors starts flowing in, and as it starts to, the asset class starts to gain interest from wholesale investors, financial advisors, there has been a lot of talk from regulators about concerns over transparency. Even APRA recently came out, I think it was at the end of last year, saying that they would be heightening supervision of the super funds investments in unlisted assets. Is this a move that's been welcomed by those who work in the industry? Do you think it needs more regulation, or do you think maybe it's just being a little overblown by the regulators?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's especially with the flows of wholesale money coming in. You know, I think obviously you need to be transparent with your investors, with the market. You know, we obviously it's easy to talk about all the positives of private credit. Mm-hmm. But if we look at, for example, we have seen a tick up in corporate defaults. I mean, the US is much more transparent. So their market longer term is typically around 2%. It's now, you know, over 4%. And again, that really reflects, I think, pressure on the consumer in terms of a higher rate burden in terms of it can be the mortgage, it can be, you know, just inflation in terms of going to the grocer. Similarly, in Australia, we don't have as detailed of data, but ASIC does publish their insolvency information, and we have seen obviously insolvencies come up. Again, that's less in the corporate sector, but it's something we're watching. So I think it's the natural move by the regulator to be on top of where investor flows, especially wholesale retail flows, are going. So I think as a practitioner in the market, you know, I think we actually think in some ways, you know, you're trying to work towards a gold standard. So it does give you the ability to sort of put your hand up and say, you know, we're already, you know, running through all these controls. You know, for example, we sit down as a investment committee on a monthly basis and review every credit update, ratings, valuations, et cetera. So if you're working towards a higher standard, we think for the industry itself, you know, it's only a positive. Does create a little bit more of an administrative burden. So already we have, for example, like a monthly filing with APRA, but it's not something that's, you know, overly burdensome.
Well, Peter, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts and your outlook for 2025 with us. I really appreciate it.
Great. No, thanks, Eliza.
Thanks for listening to this Financial Standard podcast. For more information, visit financialstandard.com.au. Please keep in mind that the information discussed in this podcast is general in nature and does not consider personal circumstances. Reliance should not be placed on any content without further independent financial research and advice.